This is Raw Cut.
Welcome to Life Bursts. I'm Matt.
And I'm Sarah. Today, a story of music and adventures. Let's go on this one.
Yes, welcome to Life Bursts, where we love to share your stories. And today, with Sarah, we have Mark in the studio. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Great to be with us.
It's great to be here, yeah.
Yeah, so where did life start out for you, Mark, on your journey?
I don't remember the first moment, but soon after that, on the top of the hill on Morfitt Road in Seaview Downs,
okay,
which was, that was about 63 years ago, and my parents had a house, it was a housing trust house, at the end of Morfitt Road, and it was the last house there. Nowadays, if you go back there now, it's just full of houses everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But back in those days, it was a very simple brick house, and we had a big black cat called Pickles. And, that's where I grew up in the first maybe 3 years of my life. Back then in South Australia, this is in Adelaide, I think there was the population of South Australia as a whole was about 500,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Australia was about 10.5, and it's about 3 billion people in the world. So nowadays, South Australia is a bit under 2 million. Australia would be about 27 million. So it's gone from 10 to 27, nearly three times.
Mm-hmm.
And the globally, we're up to over 8 billion. So back in that when I was born, it was a totally different world.
Mm.
And in our house, for example, we didn't have a phone, no telephone. Mm-hmm. So if Mum needed to phone her mother or, call the hospital or something, she'd have to walk down the road to the phone box or the nearest neighbour that did have a telephone. So it was pretty basic back then.
Yeah.
What about radio, television?
Yeah, television. I guess radio or the wireless, was called, but I guess. But the radio, the television, I don't know if we had a television. I don't remember having a TV back then. But if we did, it would have been black and white, obviously, and there would have been three channels, I guess. A few more channels out there now.
Yeah, there are, yeah.
Over this last 60 plus years, things have changed in all of these areas, telecommunications, that sort of thing, population, housing, everything. It's been a real journey, I must say. And it's sort of interesting to look back on those times and think about what life used to be like. The world was a massive place. Everywhere was a long way away. Even interstate. Trying to get to interstate, air travel was around, but overseas was a big thing. But nowadays, people wouldn't blink twice about flying overseas somewhere. You can contact anybody with your phone, with your mobile phone, over the internet. Families are all spread out now. The kids are they're living and working all over the world. It's just so different.
Mm.
Anyway, so that's where I started out. And my parents, by the way, my mum, I think, was 22 when she had me. I was the second out of four kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an older brother and then myself and then a younger brother. And then after my younger brother was born, not long after that, I guess, we moved into the city or closer to the city, CBD, into Kings Park, which is near Unley.
Mm-hmm.
And Kings Park has five streets in it. So we always used to be proud of the fact we lived in the smallest suburb in the city. Anyway, so when I was about seven, my mother had her fourth child, which is my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found it strange that I only had two brothers, whereas my sister had three brothers. Mm. So what's going on there? Anyway, that's a terrible Lame joke. Sorry about that.
How does it work?
What soon have enough, I got myself in for
yeah.
today?
Don't worry, there won't be too many of those.
Okay.
Soon after my little sister was born, before she turned one, my father left. He left for another woman. So my mum was now on her own. She would have been a bit less than 30, and she had four kids, all under the age of 10. She was looking after. Trying to teach, teaching part time or as many hours as she could. So we were at primary school. the boys, my sister was being looked after by my grandparents or mum's parents, my grandparents on the maternal side. So I guess I was too young to really realise what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, fortunately, I was at that sort of a certain age where it didn't, I don't think it affected me too much. My wife seems to think that it did affect me, but I think I'm normal, yeah. you know. Yeah. And so we just got on with things. But in hindsight, looking back, you know, my mum had a really tough time. She struggled with migraines and things and, you know, just to make ends meet because we weren't that super, super well off. I guess we were probably in the middle somewhere. But for me, I had a good childhood. I loved going to school, primary school. We went to, we all went to Westbourne Park Primary School and used to walk there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that far, but I don't know that nowadays whether kids walk to school. Maybe some do, but, you know, in this day and age, it's, you know, possibly a bit problematic.
So besides walking to school and spending that time with your siblings, what else did you do together?
Well, my parents, well, my mother and my dad were both musical. So
okay.
Although we weren't super well off, our mum encouraged me to have piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to piano lessons and she also encouraged me to take up the trombone.
Okay.
So I joined the Mitcham City Brass Band.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
For a number of years, mm-hmm. Playing trombone and marching in the band. We did some Christmas pageants, the John Martin's Christmas pageants. Okay. It was cool. Back then.
Yeah.
The trombone is an interesting instrument. It's this long instrument, and you move the part of it backwards and forwards to lengthen lengthen or shorten the amount of the tube.
Yeah.
So, and by shortening or lengthening, it changes the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Together with using your lips on the mouthpiece, and we did a lot of marching. We did competitions back then, I remember our bandmaster, he'd be yelling at us when we were marching practice, telling us not to dig potatoes. Because if we had our heads down and we're playing like this, the trombone would be getting close to the ground. Yeah. You know, so you had to hold your head up while you're playing. Piano and trombone.
Which one did you like better, piano or trombone?
Piano, definitely piano. Trombone was a bit dorky. You know, because this is an instrument case that was of strange shape and it wasn't cool. So I gave it up as soon as I could.
Easier to carry. Easier to carry at the Christmas pageant, though.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
What did you hit teenage years and then just decide, that's it, no more?
A bit like that, When I hit teenage, Mum had also encouraged me to take up ballet. So I did. I got a scholarship. I don't know how, but I won a scholarship to do ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went along to the ballet classes, and I think I was the only bloke or boy. I was the only boy and all these girls around, and I thought it was very strange. We had to wear short black shorts and a white T-shirt and jump around, you know, do these demi-pliés and grand battements montendus and all these sort of French things. Mm-hmm. And Mum said to me, look, you know, you should do ballet. It'll be good for your football. because it'll build your strength and your balance. And probably she was right. But again, when I became a teenager, I thought, oh, no, this is uncool.
That was it.
This
done.
Is uncool.
Done, done, now, done.
That was a big mistake. Big mistake.
Okay, well, we will be back to hear more of Mark's story straight after this here on Life Burst with Matt and Sarah.
If you like what you're hearing, please write a review of this podcast on your podcasting app, or you can share this on social media.
Welcome back to Life Burst. Here with Matt and Sarah today. We are chatting with Mark. We've just learned that you did ballet, but you gave that up. You did the trombone, but you gave that one up too. But by the time you'd reached teenage years, what else happened when you were in high school?
Well, I was lucky that I really enjoyed high school. Okay. I think I had some great teachers. I think I was also lucky that I had some intelligent parents and whatever, and they handed down some good genes for me. Mm-hmm. So I really did well at school. I really enjoyed it. And during that time, I taught myself guitar.
Okay.
So, and that was a cool instrument. So guitar was cool. Trombone was not cool.
Right, yeah.
What about drums? Was that cool?
Drums, well, I don't, some people would say drums aren't music instruments, but we won't go there.
Okay.
But so guitar, so that was great because you could get your guitar and you could go to a party or whatever and, you know, just whip it out and start playing some Stairway to Heaven or Smoke on the Water or something like that. You may not have heard of these songs, but
they are. No, I haven't.
They're the go-tos.
Yeah, that's right. So that was great. I did well in the sciences, mathematics, physics, chemistry, all of those the subjects. I ended up getting in year 12, at the end of the year, I got 4 A's and a B, so I was pretty happy with that, although I should have got 5 A's. This is back, the scoring system was different back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kicking myself that I didn't get, you know, or five A's. Anyway, it was enough to go and do a science degree at Adelaide Uni, so that's where I went next. And by this stage, I was also very busy playing sport. I probably didn't mention, I took up football, Aussie rules football in primary school, and continued that through high school. Also played basketball and cricket. So when I got to uni, I was busy playing lots of sport and also playing in, by that stage, I was playing in a band. Okay. In fact, we'd started I was in the school, high school band.
Mm-hmm.
Where we made the Battle of the Bands final and we played down at Festival Theatre.
Right.
And they had the big final, the theatre was packed. It's a funny story, the name of the band was Nouveau. That was the name of our high school band.
Yeah.
And there was a band from Unley called New Rose.
Oh.
Okay, so at the end of the night, the announcer announced the name of the winning band and the winning band was New, and we're thinking, yes, we've done it. New Rose, not New Vogue. So we were close.
So
but,
close.
But anyway, so music was becoming a bigger part of my life by then, and I was, by the time of early uni days.
There's a CD here as well that you brought in. Have we skipped over that?
Well, I'll talk to
okay.
I started to make my own music later on. So anyway, I was in some bands. We were playing lots of clubs around town, discos. Discos were the big thing back then.
Yeah.
A lot of these venues don't exist anymore in the city.
Mm-hmm.
We did country shows as well. So we did a lot of shows. I was busy with music. I was also busy playing sport. And sometimes they didn't quite mix. I remember one time I was playing for, might have been Adelaide Uni. I think it was Adelaide University at the time. And I got king hit from behind and that knocked me out and I blacked out and I woke up on the side of the sidelines with someone, you know, the trainer asking me, you know, who am I and what day is it and where am I and these things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And another time I was severely injured and sort of separated the collarbone from my shoulder, and I had to go to hospital. And unfortunately that night the band had a gig on down at the Findon Hotel or somewhere. So I was in a bit of trouble because not only was I the lead singer, I was also the rhythm guitarist.
Mm.
Okay.
Luckily, mm-hmm. when they put my arm in a sling, it was my right shoulder and my right, you know, the right arm was in a sling. So yeah. It was like this. And, of course, I could then play. So I managed to get through the night. But I was very lucky that throughout my sporting career and musical career, I've never had an injury that, you know, affected the music. Later on, I became a keyboard player in some other bands, and so I had to be very careful with my fingers and not. And there was a few times playing basketball where I would sprain my fingers. You know, you get hit on the end of the fingers and sprain your finger. So I had to watch out a little bit. And so after some time, I decided that if I had a show coming up, I wouldn't play basketball the week before.
Good idea.
Yeah. So. University, really busy socially, but I managed to get through, sort of scrape through uni.
Right, yeah.
And I did a science degree in majoring in mathematics, which is, I don't know if that's cool or not. But,
did play the trombone.
That's right. So got my science degree, and then because I'd loved high school, my teachers and everything, I'd really loved all of that. So I decided that I'd wanted to be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I'd be a maths teacher. So after my science degree, I did a diploma of education, which was an extra year. And for the diploma of education, you have to do some prac teaching. So I did some prac teaching at Pulteney Grammar,
mm-hmm.
and at Urbray High School.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I wasn't much older than the kids at school. You know, I was teaching year 11s in these sort of practice terms.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were, half of them were the young fellas. They were bigger than me. I remember at Urbray, you know, that half of them were wearing black beanies and, you know, pretty tough kids. And I had a little Mini Cooper, a mini car that I'd drive to work. And some of these kids had, you know, big cars, and they wanted to drag me in the car park and things like that. Sorry. It was... In some ways, it's quite daunting being such a young person and then out there teaching.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I did my teaching diploma and that was great, but I couldn't get a teaching job. So I had to look around for another job. And I just happened to see an advert in the university newsletter looking for graduates at IBM, which is the International Business Machines company,
mm-hmm.
a global company, massive computing business. I had no idea who they were, so I had to do a bit of research. I couldn't Google it because there was no such thing as Google back then, but in the library or wherever. Went to an interview, did an aptitude test, seemed to go okay, and got the job with IBM.
Doing what?
Well, IBM turned out to be the one and only company I ever worked for. So for the next 30-plus years, I worked for IBM in a whole range of different areas. I started off as a systems engineer, which is sort of on the software engineering side.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the days before the personal computer, so when I joined. But the next year, second year of my career there, the IBM personal computer came out. And I've got a little prop here to show you. I don't know if you can see that there. This is what the IBM personal computer looked like back then.
Yeah, there's the floppy drives. And
keyboard had little floppy drives in here and a little screen. Originally, I think it was a black and white screen, but you could pay through the nose for a colour one.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the original personal computer in Australia, this was the first computer that would allow people to have a computer in their homes.
Yeah.
or small businesses instead of having these massive computers. So this was a big deal, and it actually helped IBM to become even more popular.
Mm.
That's right. And also just want to point out before we go to a break, that is not to scale. They were a lot more than that. Yeah. Just because, right. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Good pick up.
That's
good.
Not to scale what it is. But anyway, we'll be back with more Life Burst chatting with Matt here. Sorry, chatting with, yep, more Life Mark. Burst with Matt and Sarah straight after this.
Hey, did you know this show is available in video too? You can find it at rawcut.com.au.
This is Life Burst with Sarah and Matt. We're chatting to Mark, who was working for IBM at the advent of the personal computer.
That's right.
Stuck with him for many years.
I did. Throughout those years, I ended up doing so many things. I started off in the engineering side.
Mm-hmm.
I moved into sales. I was in marketing for a while. I was in sales operations for a while.
Okay, I have a question regarding yes. that. Okay, so to sell a computer, like, that's not that small because they're a lot bigger than that. What did you say to people? How did you describe this to people who'd, like, yeah, that wanted
to? Okay, well, to cut a long story short, it's really all about talking to your prospective client and asking them what it is they do and what they need help with.
Okay.
And depending on what they do and what they need help with, we've got a solution for you. Yeah, and there's lots of things, as you know, computers can do, and companies were learning as well as the technology improving. And, so it was really just – it was people business, talking to people, finding out what it is they did and what they needed, and then helping to put together a solution.
And did the people that come to you, did they already know what a computer was, or did you have to describe that to them as well?
A bit of both. Back in those days, government business was possibly one of the biggest areas. Mm. You know, and there was lots of processing of records, files and records. So computers used to do a lot of filing and data retrieval and things like that. So customers knew what they needed to do, and they didn't necessarily know what could help them to do it better and make it faster and more accurate and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, customers were aware of computers. Have been around since the 50s mm-hmm. in very large configurations.
Mm-hmm.
But as processing technology got faster and storage capacity got bigger, we were able to bring out smaller computers that were still very powerful.
Mm.
It's really interesting when the Apollo 11 spaceship got to the moon,
mm-hmm.
the computing power they had on there was about as powerful as a little calculator.
Mm.
So, in fact, the power that you've got on your mobile phones is even more powerful than what they used to get to the moon.
Mm. Yeah.
So back in those days, they had to use a lot of brain power as well.
Yeah.
The
good old days.
Yeah. The good old days. I mean, I don't know, maybe one of the worries possibly about today is the fact that with all this technology to help us, we don't use our brains as much as we used to in the old days. So I think we've got to need to be a bit careful about not letting our brains become too lazy. We've got to keep working them and putting them to use. So anyway, slight aside there. But
so did you use the big floppy disks or the?
Well, we had.
Describe a floppy disk to people who might not even know what a floppy disk is.
Yeah, well, a floppy disk was a little bit like a CD disk. Now, some of you may not know what a CD
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
It's
yeah.
a round thing like this, like but the floppy one, coaster, yeah. It had information on the magnetic strip,
mm-hmm.
But it was floppy because it was of the material it was made of.
Okay.
And so you would have your computer like, you know, this or bigger ones, and you would put the floppy disk in a disk drive. It would read it and get the information off of there.
Yeah.
They then moved to hard disks. And with bigger capacity, and then they moved to transistors and electronic circuitry, which was even a greater capacity, and so on. I don't want to bore people with all the technology, but technology back in those days was doubling in capacity, doubling in speed every 2 years or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And it continued that way for 20 plus years or so.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the amount of power that we have in our pockets is incredible.
Mm.
Yes, it would be. For you to have been part of that adventure and journey.
Yeah. And it was also great because I, well, actually, as a result of joining a multinational company, I ended up moving to Sydney and living and working there for 16 or so years. I also went and lived and worked in New York for 2 years. So I got to experience a large Australian city and a large global city, in fact, one of the most iconic cities in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was amazing. Very full on, but in the end I was very happy to come back to Australia because sometimes these large cities that have got lots of excitement and plenty of things to do can suck a bit of life out of you. So I needed to get back. Well, they needed me back anyway for work, but I was happy to get back to Sydney. And then even Sydney became just too much. The traffic in Sydney is a nightmare. The housing is a nightmare. And eventually I came back to South Australia and moved to the Adelaide Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So I went from, you know, the ridiculous to the sublime in a way, you know, from New York back to the Adelaide Hills, lovely, quiet country town.
Mm.
Yeah, what was the hardest part about living in New York?
Actually, I found it. I didn't really find it that hard, but there's possibly, you know, some of the cultural differences, just getting used to, you know, tipping in a restaurant, which I'm happy to say we don't have in Australia really, or to any degree. Over there, they need it because the waiting staff and so on, they're on a really low wage, and so they actually rely on tipping, you know, 15 or 20% to get a decent salary. I didn't really find it that hard, to be honest. It's just it's in some ways it's kind of creeps up on you and it's a bit overwhelming. You know, there's the population, the size of the population, the noise. It's a very noisy city to live in, but there's always something to do. It's a very diverse, multicultural place. We made some good friends there. In fact, when I first moved there, we were living just outside of the city. We're about a 50-minute drive out of the central New York, and we were at dinner with some friends, and there was a mutual friend of the friends was a local New York boy, or man, and we said, okay, it's time for us to go home and drive home. And he said, oh, look, it's getting a bit late. Don't drive all that way home. Here's the keys to my apartment. You stay at my place. I'll go and stay at my girlfriend's place. And we'd only just met him that night. And here he was giving us the keys to his apartment. He didn't know us from a bar of soap, and yet he was happy to let us stay at his place. So naturally, of course, we became good friends. But, yeah, we found the people over there generally are lovely people, really happy, friendly people, which may not be the case with, say, the governments of some of these countries. So sometimes it's hard for us to tell the difference or to ensure we differentiate between the average citizen and the government that might be making decisions that we don't like.
Sure. Yeah.
You were happy to come back to
Australia. I was very happy to come back, yeah, and I had lots of friends back in Sydney, closer to family as well here in Adelaide. Yeah, I just felt that it was starting to become a bit overwhelming with the on this. I'm not sure if this the social aspects or whatever it was in New York, but it could have overwhelmed me, and I could have got sucked into it a little bit more and going out and partying and all that sort of thing, which was okay once in a while, but not every weekend, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when you moved back, were you able to still work for IBM?
I did. Yeah. I continued to work. I had an international role, so I was looking after people in different countries, particularly in Asia. So I did a lot of travel across Asia. I probably went to Japan and China 10 to 20 times in each of those countries, conferences, meeting up with people that were my peers or that worked for me. So that was great. And I was on a good, pretty good wicket in terms of salary and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the pressure of being in a high responsibility job does get to you after a while. And mm-hmm. I really decided that I didn't want to be get bogged down by that, get dragged down.
Mm-hmm.
Life is about more than just earning a big salary and, you know, travelling around the world.
Mm.
So I decided to move back to Adelaide, still working for IBM. My boss was in China at the time, living and working over there. So, and I had people still working all over the country as well as internationally. So it didn't matter where I was. So I decided, I'm going to move back to Adelaide. So I moved back to Adelaide, didn't even tell my boss, because by then, you know, communications were teleconferences, video conferences and that sort of thing. Lots of email work. So I could still do my job working out of the Adelaide office here. That's what happened. And I came back in the mid-2000s.
Well, there we go. Well, we'll take a break there and we'll come back and hear more of Mark's story straight after this here on Life Burst with Matt and Sarah.
In Australia, juvenile arthritis affects 1 in 1,000 children. It's a silent yet common condition. Kids Arthritis is here to help support these children and their families. To help them, go to kidsarthritis.org. This has been a Raw Cut community service announcement.
Welcome back to Life Burst. Here with Matt and Sarah. Today we're chatting with Mark. We're almost to the part where we get to do the music, but... You are now finishing up at IBM because you're thinking, you know, there's more to life than just a big salary and working.
That's exactly right. Well, I'm almost finished at IBM, and I moved back from Sydney back to Adelaide. But in fact, prior to coming back to Adelaide permanently, I had come back to Adelaide on a surprise visit to see my mother. My mother had taken up painting in her later years after she was, I think, in her early 60s, she decided to take up painting and because she'd retired by then. And it goes to show that it's never too late to start something. She ended up having her own exhibition of all of her paintings, and she was selling paintings and things. Anyway, so I thought this was her first exhibition as in Norwood, I think, and I thought I'd make a surprise visit. So I didn't tell anyone that I was coming over, and I surprised her when I came over. And when I got there, she was obviously pleased to see me. But I also ran into a lady called Kerry, who is now my wife.
Okay.
She.
You better tell the question.
So I better tell you about
her. How did you meet Kerry?
Yeah, well, I met Kerry when we were children. Our families used to go camping together down at York Peninsula and also down at Robe on the limestone coast. So we knew our parents were mutual friends at Teachers College, and we used to get together for family camping holidays until I was in my mid-teens when we sort of drifted apart. So I hadn't seen Kerry for many, many years. And then there she was. She'd kind of got herself invited to my mother's art exhibition because my mother and Kerry's mother had still kept in touch with each other over the years. Anyway, so Kerry was there. By this time I was single, and Kerry was there, and we got chatting and reliving all the wonderful days of how much fun we had with children. Anyway, at the end of the night, I said, well, I'll see you later. I've got to go back to Sydney, because I hadn't moved from Sydney at that stage. And we started a correspondence together in the good old-fashioned way of handwritten paper and pen. And so we corresponded that way for for about a year or something.
I have to ask Mark, was she the most beautiful woman in the room?
Oh, she was, definitely. No right doubt answer. About that.
Kerry, if you're watching.
No doubt
Correct
about that.
Answer.
Yeah, yeah. So we found we had a lot in common. So we talked all night, and we throughout the next year on the phone and via letters, but a lot of phone calls, we found out that we had a lot of things in common. We loved music together, same sorts of music.
Yeah.
We loved nature and the environment, and these are things that we got more into as mm-hmm. as the years went by. So what ended up happening was I moved to Adelaide so that I could be closer to Kerry. I could still do my job at IBM.
Aww.
And I continued to work for another few years in that way. And by this time, Kerry and I were together in the same house. When I decided I'd retire from IBM and focus on Kerry, and she had some health issues that she was dealing with. So I thought, okay, I've got to get my priorities right here. Let's concentrate on that, and then concentrate on having a fuller life outside of work. And I guess reaping the rewards from all of that work, hard work that I'd done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those working years, particularly in the last 5 to 10, involved a lot of late night conference calls and more travel. And so I had been away from home a lot. It was quite a stressful time. And I thought, well, the last thing I want to do is to drive myself into the ground and get unhealthy through all the stress and so on. So I finally retired and was able to spend more time with Kerry and spend more time making music.
Yes, so, which is why all these CDs
right,
are here.
So the band got back together, the one that I used to play in before I left moved out of Adelaide.
Is it this one?
Is it? Yes, a band called Big Squid.
Oh, yes.
There's a brochure from the band, Big Squid. We were a glam rock band, played all around town. Anyway, so we got the band back together and I started to make my own music as well. I was inspired by what was going on in the world, politics, the environment. In fact, I'm going to be playing a song a bit later on.
Yes, stay tuned for that.
It's about nature and the Murray River in particular, and I'd like to see if you could also participate and join me in this song, Sarah.
Both of us.
Both of you, Sarah and Matt, if you can join me, I'm looking forward to that.
This is not just like the dancing thing where you just put me out there to have to do the
dancing. We'll have a go.
We're going to
do this together. Hopefully we can do that. Yeah, so I started writing my own music as well.
Mm.
I've produced a few CDs that you might be able to see on the desk there.
Pick it up. Pick it up. I can hold it up to the camera for
here.
You.
Oh, this is a couple. This one here was Be What You Want to Be. That's one of the CDs. That was when I'd first retired or close to retiring. And it was more about really doing what you really feel like you want to do or need to. You know, we need money to put bread on the table and a roof over our head. But other than that, you know, what's more important is being with your loved ones, doing what you can for your neighbours and the community, getting involved to make the world a better place, make your neighbourhood a better place, whatever.
Good.
So
this is all self-recorded,
These are self-recorded. Yes. There's another one there. Yeah, that one there. I can show you this one.
Is that you there?
This is what I looked like when I was in high school when I first started playing guitar.
Long hair there.
I've got long hair. Well, that's what it was like in the 70s.
Okay, yeah.
When it was cool. Long hair was like, maybe it's still cool, I don't know. But
no trombone
it was,
there, though.
It was
no
cool
trombone.
Back in the 70s. And so that one was Crow's Nest Idol, which was a play on the Australian Idol concept. This one is called Mixed Lollies, Anyone. It's basically because the music was really diverse and I just started to get into learning about music software, using music software to record lots of different sounds and things. I mean, it is so different now, but back then I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And
last one
here, this is called Random. This was
why is it called random?
It was random because the music was a random collection.
It was a bit like
mixed lollies, really. So started getting into music, writing about things that were important to me, mm-hmm. politics, world politics, what was happening in Australia. There's there's a lot of good stuff happening in Australia, but also a lot of bad stuff. Yeah. And rather than just, you know, fun little pop songs about boy meets girl, girl meets boy sort of thing,
yeah.
Write about maybe some more serious topics and things that mean more to me. And so that's what all the music's about.
And we've got these two other things here as well.
That's right, because you've been volunteering as well.
Yeah. That's right, volunteering. I do a bit of work with kids' arthritis. Sarah would know that. I am involved with the local newsletter here. We produce a newsletter. Some of my photos there, you can see that pelicans with a seagull on its back. And the other one there is seagulls. They seem to like to ride on the backs of other animals.
The story.
So that's there's one with that. This is at the wetlands at Mount Barker, Laratinga. A seagull on top of a turtle's back there. Mm. So photography, wildlife photography is of interest to me now too, and the environment, and yeah, just getting on with things like that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, when we come back, we are going to have an opportunity to hear one of Mark's songs.
With us.
With you. Accompanied.
We get to do it.
So don't go away. This is Life Burst with Sarah and Matt.
Raw Cut is also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter with the handle Raw Cut AU.
Welcome back to Life Burst with Matt and Sarah, and you're in for a special treat because Mark is in the studio. He's been talking about his music, his lifelong love for it, you know, aside from all the other things in life, and we have a song to share. So, Mark, tell us about this song.
Yes, thanks, Matt. This is called The River, and it was inspired by a trip that Kerry and I had done a few years ago. We'd driven across to Canberra, and we were coming back kind of following in part the Murray River on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a little tour, a boat trip, and you know, the river red gums and the kingfishers and the bird life, and all, it was really inspiring and just beautiful. And so I ended up writing a song about it. So it's called The River, and that's what it's about.
And we get to sing this song
and
today.
And you get to sing along and tap along on this makeshift drum here.
Tap along.
Yeah. So I'll kick it off, shall I?
Yes. Let's do it.
Take it away.
Here we go. With the sun shining brightly on my face, the paddle steamer chugs along with a certain kind of old-time grace. I'm hypnotized by the rocking and the rolling of your gentle ways. I'm chilling out and I'm relaxed by the soothing of your water's gaze. The river red gums look down on me as they gently sway, while the whistling kites fly high above, searching for their prey. The kingfishers dart in and out of the reeds in a flash of blue. Their delicate beauty is a thing to behold, it reminds me of you. I'm hypnotized by the rocking and the rolling of your gentle waves. I'm chilling out and I'm relaxed by the soothing of your water's gaze. Do 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 do. Again. Do 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 do. Do 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 do.
through traditional owners and farmers' lands. It never stops. You've been nurturing life for thousands of years before we came along. Now it's our turn to care for you before it all goes wrong. One more time.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was, it's a song kind of singing to the Murray River about how beautiful it is and all, you know, the life around it and the fact that it's been nurturing the country, you know, and us for such a long time, and it's time for us to look after it.
Mm.
As we know, it's going through a bit of a tough time with droughts and so on and water allocations and all that drama. So that's what it's about.
Thanks for sharing it with us. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Has your music been able to be shared far and wide? Or
Some of the...
Until now.
Yeah, until now. Until now, yes, it's reaching an audience of millions.
You know? That's right. Awesome.
I make copies of my music and give them to friends and family and whatever. And occasionally, and one of my originals, we might play in the band, have done in the past. It's just something.
It's just fun.
A little hobby for myself. Yeah.
It's fun.
That's nice. Oh, yeah. Thanks for sharing it with all of us, our listeners. It's a beautiful song. We'll have those doo-doos stuck in our head for a little while.
Yeah, right. Good. Yeah. Catchy little chorus there. Yeah.
It is. Now, our final question in the remaining few moments of our show. If you had one piece of advice to share with everybody listening and watching today, what would that be, Mark?
Well, I don't know if there'd be one piece of advice, but... I think what I've been fortunate to do is what hopefully other people can do, and that is follow their passions and their dreams. Obviously, we need to do what we have to put food on the table and a roof over our head for our families and so on. But money isn't the be-all and end-all, and, you know, if we can enjoy life, stay healthy and help others, be mindful of what's happening around us, and just doing what you can to make the world a better place. I think that's, if we could all do that, then the world would become a better place. So I guess that's something I'll try and do for the rest of my time here. We should all try and do that if we can, I think. And yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
it is.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Mark. Thank you for sharing your life story with us today and teaching us.
Hopefully it's not too boring for people out there.
No, always.
I'm sure it's not.
Love
it.
We love hearing stories here at Life Burst. Great to have yours, Mark. So thank you again.
Yes, this has been Life Burst with Matt and Sarah. You can catch up with us wherever you get your podcasts from, on community television, radio, and, of course, on social media. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Matt. We will see you next time.
We're going to go out with a do-do-do-do-do.
Take it away.
You can sing along too, Matt.
Together.
Okay. Life Bursts is hosted by Matthew Karat and Sarah Freeman, with production by Rhys Jarrett and Kay Hoshraw Ozadigan. For more episodes of Life Bursts, go to rawcut.com.au. This is a Rawcut production.